Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Our classrooms are more diverse than ever. The teachers who lead those classes are not. School districts want the diversity, but achieving that goal is more complicated than just hiring more teachers of color. In August, the Brookings Institution and others released a report that examines the issues and asks what it would take to close the diversity gap. Coming up, we'll hear from an Ohio State University scholar who studies urban education issues, and we'll meet a retired school principal with 30 years experience, who's former president and now treasurer of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators. Joining us now from the Brookings Institution Brown Center for Education Policy, Michael Hansen. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You're one of the co-authors of the report I mentioned in the introduction. The notion of this teacher-student diversity gap, it's not new.
That's right. It's not new. People have been paying attention to this for quite a while, and they and scholars have theorized in the past, you know, say, back starting in the 70s even, that part of the black-white achievement gap that we see between black and white students is perhaps in part driven by the fact that black students are disproportionately exposed to whiter teachers rather than black teachers as they matriculate through more integrated schools. And so then some have speculated that this is part of the reason for that achievement gap. And so perhaps by fixing this diversity gap, we may be able to help remediate the achievement gap. Now, the empirical evidence is not as strong as those theorists originally believed, but there is some credibility to that argument.
You crunched the numbers and found that at this rate, the 9 percentage point gap between teachers of color and students of color will remain at least through 2060 and will even increase between Hispanic teachers and Hispanic students. I should say the first number is between black teachers and black students, and it will increase between Hispanic teachers and Hispanic students during that period. If districts want more diversity, why don't they just hire more diversity?
That's a great question. Now, many districts are trying to do exactly that, and there are minority teacher candidates who are applying for jobs, and they certainly could get, and certainly some areas are disproportionately hiring more of them. So the problem isn't that they just can't hire more of them, but if they do hire more of them, then that typically means that the neighboring school district is probably going to have fewer of them to choose from, because these teacher workforce, teacher candidate pools, they tend to be pretty localized, and so if say Columbus is hiring a lot, there's going to be neighboring districts who are getting fewer. So we argue in the paper that the major source of leakage in the pipeline isn't just at the point of hire, but it's trying to get more minority students to and through college, and then trying to convince more of those students to consider a career in teaching in public school.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the gap between the number of students, black students, Hispanic students, students of color, and the gap between that number, which is growing and moving into a solid majority now, and the number of teachers of color, the number of black teachers, Hispanic teachers of color there to teach them. It's a huge gap. 80% of teachers out there are white. Well over 50% of students are black or Hispanic in the United States. Big gap, 9 percentage point gap that could take, well, at least until 2060 and probably will be on to bridge. My guest is Michael Hansen. He's an education policy researcher at the Brookings Institution and the director of the Brown Center on Education Policy. We're going to be talking about this all hour. If you have a question, you got a comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So that just getting people to enroll in a teaching program at a university or a college is the first step. Why the problem there?
We are not entirely clear why there's a problem there, but we do see evidence that it is there. For example, even when juniors and seniors in high school who are taking their SATs, when asked whether or what their intended major is, there's already a gap between white and minority students filling out those questionnaires. Those gaps, so those roughly 7% of white students will say that they would intend to pursue a career, or they want to pursue an education major, whereas between 3% and 4% of minority students will reveal the same thing. So it already begins early on.
Is it part of a vicious cycle then? I mean, because I know we're going to talk about, just role models. I mean, a lack of role models.
There certainly may be a vicious cycle at play here. Now, I don't feel like we have enough strong empirical evidence to document the entire extent of the cycle. So as a scientist, I'm a little hesitant to say it is a cycle, but it certainly seems that there's that there is this confluence of factors that do work together to provide minority kids with not very great experiences in the classroom as they're growing up. And so therefore, when they comes time for them to go to college, choose a major, then many of them don't exactly feel warm, solid experiences in the classroom, so they don't want to go right back to that classroom.
So we've got low college enrollment to begin with. We've got low number of minority college students who take an interest in teaching. And then the next issue is at the other end is burnout. They don't last as long.
That's right. Teachers of color, so black and Hispanic teachers, they tend to leave the classroom at higher rates. Now, I don't know if we can safely say that this is burnout, because those teachers, black and Hispanic teachers, actually tend to disproportionately teach in high poverty school settings, and it tends to be that compared to white teachers in those same school settings, it's the white teachers that actually move more frequently. However, there are more white teachers across the labor pool in general, and so sort of the localized retention rate of black and Hispanic teachers is actually low. Is the localized retention rate is higher, but in aggregate, compared to the universal retention rate across the whole workforce, minority teachers are retained at lower rates than white teachers.
So let's talk about what the research tells us about why student-teacher diversity parity is important.
Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned just a few moments ago, theorists have talked about this since the 70s and 80s. And so role modeling is one of the theorized reasons why students may benefit from having a more diverse teacher workforce in front of the classroom. There are also elements of expectations, and so that a teacher who shares your same same cultural background and your similar experience growing up, that teacher is going to have higher expectations of students, and the expectations themselves become a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, there is some evidence that this is a mechanism that does happen as well. Low expectations have been noted when matching, for example, white teachers and black students. finally, there are also an interaction between behaviors and race that are perceived as being when you have a white teacher and black teacher students, the same behaviors as what maybe a white student would have in the classroom, you know, disruptive behavior, for example, this could be perceived as differently by the white teacher as threatening or more disruptive than it would be if it were coming from a white student. So there's also that behavioral control element that has also come into the discussion as well.
So sort of that implicit bias we keep hearing about these days.
Yeah, that's right. And you could say that, in fact, both the expectations and this behavior control issue, both of these could be various forms of this implicit bias.
I read in preparing for this that getting to the behavior issue that a lot of black, particularly black male teachers, the few of them that are out there, often are assigned that role in a school to handle behavior problems, to be the disciplinarian, and that creates a burnout function. Although you don't want to use the word burnout, but I know what you mean.
and that may be true as well. And perhaps by having the black teacher in that disciplinarian role, they also could be more conducive to seeking reconciliation first, or trying to come at some agreement where it's not necessarily as immediately punitive. Maybe let's look at perhaps trying to give the student a role or engaging the student in some way that doesn't necessarily go to a suspension or a detention right away.
So let's go back to the issues of the teacher pipeline and first of all, just college enrollment in general. You need to start with the basics and get more people going to college, because then you're going to increase the percentages of people that are interested in education. But what else is there out there to attract students? What do we know about that?
There's a lot of things that we potentially could do to improve the attractiveness of teaching as a profession in general. And so there's a widely held view that teachers are underpaid, which I'm not going to dispute, because in general, relative to other industrialized countries, they typically are underpaid in our country. Mm-hmm. And so so perhaps part of the reason why we are not seeing as many people attracted to this is because it really takes a lot of motivation and a willingness to be underpaid for a significant portion of your career in order to take a position teaching in the classroom. Also, this goes to, I feel like this is, I'm beginning to wade into my own speculations about what's happening rather than relying on clear evidence. But there's also, we know that education is dominated by women, typically. More than 80% of the workforce is women, and that's even larger among elementary school teachers. And so what this typically means for a typical household is that where you have two partners who are leading the household, you have a husband and a wife, typically, and the husband is going to be earning more money and the wife is going to be earning less money. And so if you're looking at this dual income role of a household, it's harder. And we also know that among minority households, we tend to not have the same level of joint wages across both partners within the household. And so among white women, I think this is speculation, but it's certainly possible that white women are able to take a little bit more of this hit on their income by being a teacher, because they have a relatively high second income in the house, where that may not be as true among black households or Hispanic households. Again, this is speculation. I can't speak to the veracity of that statement, but this seems like this could be happening here.
All right. Well, Michael Hansen, thanks for kicking this off for us. I appreciate your time today.
I'm glad to be here, and happy to field any more comments later.
Michael Hansen, education policy researcher at the Brookings Institution and director of the Brown Center on Policy Education. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The U.S. Department of Education has predicted that by 2022, more than half of public school students will be non-white. Currently, 80% of public school teachers are white, and researchers say that it could take decades to close that gap. We're talking about how the gap hurts and what it will take to close it. Joining us by phone is urban education professor in the College of Education and Human Ecology at Ohio State University, where he is executive director of the Todd Anthony Bell National Resource Center on the African American Male, Dr. James Moore III. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning.
Also with us, retired elementary school principal with nearly 30 years' experience in education and former president and current treasurer of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators. She's also now with the Educational Service Center, Jeanette Henson. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Dr. Moore, you're involved in the Wyler Scholarship Program, which recruits minority students to the field of education. What have you learned about what the obstacles are?
Well, there are a number of obstacles, and oftentimes the obstacles begin in the household. And what do I mean by that? There are past studies by a dear friend, colleague, Dr. Chance Lewis, did a study in 2006 looking at African-American males' factors that influenced their decision to go into teaching. It wasn't a national sample, but he was looking at three large comprehensive school districts in Louisiana. And he discovered that family members play a critical role in influencing African-American males' decisions to go into college. And I know anecdotally, you know, oftentimes when these young men, when they want to go on to college, their parents want them to go into areas that will render employment outcomes that will allow them to successfully move through the social continuum of economics. And sometimes families don't see teaching profession as a viable option for their children in terms of, you know, giving social mobility for them in their futures. And so we have to shatter the myths and share some realities, but he also found in a study that many of these young men want to go into professions that make a difference. And oftentimes, because the options haven't been presented to them to be a teacher, or looking at all the great social rewards that are given to an individual by going into the teaching profession. And I would say what we try to do in our program is to continue to heighten their interest in the teaching profession. We provide ongoing coaching, and we try to show them the different opportunities that are available to them and the social equity that they build by going into the profession.
Does this start when they're in high school, or do you not get your hands on them until they're in college?
We don't get our hands onto these young men until they get in college. And that, if we have more resources, I would certainly love to go into the high schools and develop these young individuals. As we know, there's a dearth of people of color in the teaching profession, but it's even more pronounced when you begin to look at African-American and Latino males, which our schools around the country, particularly in our urban and rural communities, are really struggling by not having viable numbers of males of color who work in the teaching profession.
Jeanette Henson, from where you sat for 30 years, whether it was in a classroom or as a principal, what's your sense about how students latch on to career options in the first place, and why not a teaching? Because it's not high paying at the beginning, but that's true of a lot of professions, but it can be very satisfying and secure in the middle and end.
Correct. I agree. And I also agree with Dr. Moore. Hello, Dr. Moore. You had my son, Daryl Murphy. He told me to tell you hello.
Please tell him I said hi.
I will. But again, I believe it starts with early on in education, of course, with students and giving them multiple experiences. And I think and I feel that if we have early mentoring in the elementary schools, and that's, of course, my passion is elementary, giving them multiple experiences, expose them to mentorship within the building and giving them outside experiences as well. I think that is one way to help lead and guide them into professions and education.
You mean mentoring with teachers, having teachers do that?
Or people in the community. Okay. Absolutely. Mentoring. All right. But to have the mentoring program within the schools.
We talked earlier about kind of a maybe a, with my last guest was about maybe a vicious cycle when it comes to this. Is that something that you've seen as an educator?
What I've seen is I've tried many different avenues and encouraging students to even choose a profession early on in their career. And one thing that I have done is had a young gents program. And we had community leaders come in during the lunch hour and just sit with the young boys and talk to them about, you know, their experience, their current experiences, and talk to them about what they are doing, the mentors themselves are doing in the communities, and guide them. And so this is and we targeted third and fourth grade young men. And because we know this is a critical time in their life that they need to someone to listen to them and to know that there are many, many options out there for them, including education.
And what do you hear from them at that age?
What I hear from the boys is that, for one, they're very appreciative of the program. They get so excited. It was once, twice every other week. So it was about twice a month. And they get so excited. And they, on those particular days, they had to wear shirt and ties.
Okay.
And many of them have never owned a tie. And they learn how to tie a tie and they learn manners. And so we were able to also take them, for instance, to a golf course and expose them to golf. And so that was just kind of our way of just helping them, encouraging them and letting them know there's many things out there and they can do whatever they want. And so we were pretty much there to motivate them to stay in school, to do well in school, because we know with education, no one can take that away from you.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the disconnect between the number of children of color in our public schools. It's going to reach beyond 50% by 2022. And the dearth of teachers of color, be it black or Hispanic or whatever, to teach them. It's a problem. It makes a difference in an education. You just heard from Jeanette Henson. She's a retired principal at Tusing Elementary in the Pickerington Local School District and former president and current treasurer of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators. Also with us by phone, Dr. James Moore. He's an urban education professor in the College of Education and Human Ecology at OSU. He's also executive director of the Todd Anthony Bell National Resource Center on the African-American Male. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dr. Moore, getting at this piece, when you know, we talk about making sure they can read by the time they're in the third or fourth grade, right? But Jeanette Henson's talking about getting a foothold and just in the whole idea of an occupation and how you fit into society. Is that something that you see as valuable when you by the time you get them when they're in college?
Oh, certainly. I think there's a decline in emphasis on career development and vocational guidance across the nation. And I've seen it even at the university level. For example, somewhat related, but not totally related, but I had a NSF grant and I was studying African-American students who go into the STEM enterprise, computer science, engineering, physics, all the different science areas, mathematics. And what we found that even when students had high academic efficacy, they had low career efficacy. And so what the inference that we drew from that, not enough emphasis is placed on career development. Oftentimes, we don't know enough about what the specific occupation entails. And someone might say, may say something like, well, you should be an engineer or you should be a teacher. And it leaves something, it leaves a lasting thought in their mind and say, so-and-so say I should be X. And not necessarily going the next step to find out what entails the scope of work, what are the requirements for the media entrant. And so I would say oftentimes we foreclose on opportunities like teaching because we don't know all what it entails. Now, I'll be fair to say, generally speaking, the teaching profession does not make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. However, it all depends on what region in the country you make. You know, you can be in different, like right now, I'm currently in Bermuda at a meeting, and someone was telling me that principals here make $170,000 a year, but the minimum wage in Bermuda is $17,000. Now, I wouldn't have thought the teaching profession would have been a viable place at a place like this because it's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. I'm from the South, and we have teachers that I had who were in the profession for 50 years, and they probably never tapped over $50,000
right.
in their career. But you could be in the Midwest and other places in the country, teachers making well over $100,000. And not only that, they don't work 12 months in terms of their official contract. I think we have to do more sharing what's the reality, but also shattering the myths that are surrounded around the profession. We have people who stay in these professions for 30, 40 years, not because they have to, because they enjoy working with young people and helping them reach their full potential. So I would say that more emphasis need to be placed on career development throughout at every juncture of the educational pipeline, not just within teaching, but even in the other professions as well. According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, there are over 12,000 jobs categorized. And most of us, we probably can't name 100 different jobs. And when President Obama first got into office, he said many of the jobs that were in place when he came in probably won't be in place by the time he leaves the office. So we live in an increasingly global society, and everything is changing, and new professions are emerging, which requires for these new professions for us to have high-quality teachers. To me, we're in a state of emergency in this country, not just trying to get more diverse persons to go in the teaching profession. We need to get our best and brightest in the profession. And I'm not totally convinced it's just because you don't make a lot of money, because mm-hmm. people go into social work, they go into other arenas that don't necessarily
right.
going to make you a millionaire.
That's
and
for sure.
It's a critical mass of folks who go in there.
Yeah, yeah. I want to take a quick call from Tina now. Tina in Columbus, you're on the air. You just heard from Dr. James Moore at OSU, and also with us, Jeanette Hansen, a retired principal at Tusing Elementary. Hi, Tina.
Hi, good morning. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, I'm going to try to talk fast, which I really can't do. I know for a fact that, and I'm talking about black students, when my son was a little boy, his father died when he was 11, so then I became the mother and the father, and I was really concerned with, it seemed like all of his teachers were predominantly white,
mm-hmm.
so I wondered, where are the I'm not from Columbus, of course, I wondered, where are the black teachers, where are the black females, but more importantly, where are the black male teachers? Couldn't find any. But I did start investigating, and I noticed that my son was a straight-A student. I started investigating, and I noticed that the children, I'm talking about black kids,
mm-hmm.
Predominantly boys, all the kids are allotted don't remember what the stats were, so much money to be educated. But if they were having problems, then the school system would give extra money. I think it was like $11,000 if they were troubled students to be put in, special ed or whatever it was called at that time. Mm-hmm. So that school was making more money if the kid was disruptive. And I was really troubled by that.
Yeah, well, that is interesting. Jeanette Henson, do you know what Tina's talking about? Is this something that's a thing in Ohio?
Well, I do know that if you have a school receiving Title I funds, it's based on the ethnicity. It's poverty, actually. It's based on if you have many of your students, at least 20 or more percent or more students on free lunch. Mm-hmm. And then there's extra money that comes into your district.
But not for troubled students.
I'm not aware of the troubled students. And yeah. I had students in spec ed. I actually had probably about 40 students in my building that were in spec ed, and I was not aware of any extra funds.
Hmm. Okay.
In terms of, if I may add, sure. that, special education is a federal mandate, and you get not only just dollars from local in the state level, but you get funding from the federal level. And so if you don't have students who are eligible for special education or a 504 plan, then that could be what she's referencing, that those dollars wouldn't necessarily be available to that specific schools. Mm-hmm. But, districts in the state of Ohio, like Columbus City Schools and Cleveland, they meet the threshold for free and reduced lunch that they declared all the schools as Title I schools, and which it makes it very difficult, particularly if you come from a community that, that your family do not necessarily have the economic means and on a consistent basis. Sometimes you shoot for the occupations that's going to render the greatest financial outcomes for
right.
you, and sometimes teaching. But one of the things that we're trying to do, thanks to Bob and Missy Wilder, what we're trying to do is try to prevent teachers. Why should only the STEM students go to school for free? Why shouldn't the people who are going to be the public servants in our schools that's going to really help our country become great? When we think about our country making great strides in society, it started with a great educational system. And you can't talk about a great educational system if you don't talk about the educational professionals who comprise that system. And so we need to do some critical things, and we need to have fellowships for people who, there's a BRIGHT program for people who want to leave non-traditional settings to go into the profession. So the state realized that it needed to kind of draw that talent, but we also need to have this talent development. We need to create a statewide fellowship or some kind of scholarship program for people to go in the teaching profession. And it's not just any place in America. We need them to go in the most vulnerable school systems in our society, in the inner city and some of our rural communities where we are desperately need. And I know we have loan forgiveness, but most people don't want to tag along loan forgiveness. Let's give it to them up front, and then we can do some loan forgiveness. We don't want to hold people hostage because they want to make a difference in our society. Hmm.
That's Dr. James Moore from the College of Education and Human Ecology at Ohio State. He's also executive director of the Todd Anthony Bell National Resource Center on African American Males. We are talking about the disparity between the number of children of color in our public schools and the number of teachers of color at the heads of those classrooms. It's about a 9 percentage point gap. It could take decades to erase that gap or to close that gap at the rate of hiring currently. We also have with us Jeanette Henson. She's a retired principal at Tusing Elementary and Pickerington Local Schools and former president and current treasurer of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Research has shown that students who have teachers who look like them score higher on achievement tests. But in the U.S., a 9 percentage point gap between the number of minority students and minority teachers is not expected to close anytime soon. Students of color make up half the nation's classrooms, but the U.S. Department of Education reports that in 2012, black teachers made up 7% and Hispanic teachers 8% of the teaching workforce. Today, we're talking about that gap and the challenges school districts face to close it. Still with us is retired elementary school principal and treasurer and former president of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators, Jeanette Henson, and by phone, OSU Urban Education Professor Dr. James Moore III. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we can kick off with an email from Robert who sort of underscores the point you were making earlier, Dr. Moore, and one that Jeanette Henson and I were talking about off air. He writes, "It strikes me that maybe a lot of bright young African-American students are pursuing things they view as more ambitious, like being doctors or lawyers or something that will make a lot of money. It's not unique to African-Americans, but if you want to go to school to make money, to move up, you probably are not pursuing a job at a local school. It seems to me that a student with lots of choices might view teaching as aiming low." So the question is, I think, Dr. Moore, the point you're making is we have to change that paradigm. We have to change how we view teachers. Dr. Moore?
Well, I certainly think we need to view teachers differently. I mean, I must say it used to be a noble and honorable profession. At least I still think so, mm-hmm. but you can look at popular media and every time you turn around, educators are being demonized or attacked in ways unlike in previous generations. You know, teachers used to be held in high esteem. And I think we have a lot of work to do. And when I go around the world, and particularly when I take some of our Wallace scholars, we began to see the differences in how the teaching profession is treated and how they're held in high esteem in different societies around the world. So we definitely need to change this negative narrative around the teaching profession. And it's this notion that anybody can do it. And I don't think they've been in some of the classrooms I've been in across the state of Ohio and around the United States. I think they'll learn they'll figure out quite quickly. It's more than just skill. You're going to have to be really dedicated to make it a difference in the profession.
And there's a side note of all of this is that it's just as valuable to the majority student as it is to the minority student. I mean, the diversity isn't just about that. I mean, we know, studies or at least correlations are being shown between test scores and seeing somebody who looks like you at the front of the classroom. But there's value. I mean, I guess I'm from the generation that cut my teeth on "To Sir with Love," you know, just having the value of having somebody different in front of you, too. There's something to that, right?
Oh, certainly. And, this challenge is not just a K-12 problem around it. We see the same challenge within the professorate as well. And so I just say, me being at Ohio State, how fortunate I am to work with a diverse group of students, although most of my students are white students, but they can make a difference too. I don't want people to who are listening to this and to your show to suggest that we think only diverse community is going to be able to make an impact. This is a collective effort, and I think we all benefit when we have diversity because our world is increasingly becoming more diverse and it's coming closer and closer together. It's unlike the world I grew up in South Carolina, and even the place that I used to that I grew up in is not the same place demographically. And so it just shows that over time things will change, and it's important that we not only increase the diversity in education, but not only that, we make sure that those who may not come from communities of color are well-equipped and prepared to help diverse student populations reach the highest level of success.
Adam in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Ann. Thank you very much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask really quickly. I am a 30-year-old black male in Columbus and definitely took a different career path about 5 years ago from what I projected. I am interested in changing careers, and you sound very passionate about teaching, obviously, your commenters. And I was just wondering if there's any resources that you guys have available or any direction that you could point someone in like me that would be interested in teaching. And if you think at 30, maybe it's too late, and I'll take my answer off air.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Jeanette Henson, any thoughts about that?
Well, Adam, as Dr. Moore was speaking of, they have what they call a Bright program here in the Columbus City Schools, and you can contact their office and ask them about ask them about that. But no, it's never too late to go into education.
30s, by the way, Adam,
it's like the
really
perfect,
young.
And that's like the perfect age, and we would love to have you to join the ranks of educators.
What about you, Dr. Moore? What can you tell Adam about his prospects?
Well, you know, we think Ohio State is a fine university, and I think it's a lot of Buckeyes would agree. We encourage you to check out our website, ehe.osu.edu. We have lots of scholarships that we award to students. You're never too old to be an educator. In fact, my son's teacher, he's in the fifth grade. His teacher is a former military veteran and active duty veteran. And he decided to go into the teaching corps, and both my wife and I, we adore his fifth grade teacher. So I like to think at any level, as long as you committed and you want to learn and you're ready, you're dedicating yourself for the long haul in this work. You know, I'm speaking on behalf of the profession, if you will. We welcome you.
Jeanette Henson, what is the recruiting process like? How much emphasis can you put on diversity? How does that even work, you know, kind of at ground zero in an elementary school these days?
It is. I would say that it is hard work, and you have to be dedicated and committed to the profession. But it's rewarding. There's lots of PD available, professional development available. There's a lot of collaboration going on in schools these days, as well as, you know, support. There's mentoring programs. The state has a mentoring program. It's a 4-year program that for the first 4 years in your profession that you will have someone, the same person for 4 years to guide you and help you through that process. But again, it's very rewarding. There's a lot of professional development going on and a lot of support.
So when you're recruiting, though, a candidate, how does that work? I mean, do you go out and, you know, comb the universities? What are you looking for and in terms of shooting for more diverse teaching?
Yes, there are job fairs. We attend approximately 3-4, maybe sometimes 5 job fairs within Ohio as well as outside of Ohio. Also, the National Alliance of Black School Educators, during their conference in November, they have a job fair there as well. But there's always recruitment efforts. And the biggest thing when it comes to at the building level, we talk, I talk with my colleagues, and we're kind of just word of mouth. Do you know anyone? Do you know anyone who's interested in education, especially someone of color?
Mm-hmm. And is that, does that work? That word of mouth?
Yes, it does work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can work.
And then once you do have a teacher come in who's African-American teacher, male or female, either way, what do you put in place to make, to help them succeed?
Yes, we have, like I said, a mentoring program, and we pair them up with someone specifically within the building and at their grade level who can just kind of help them out. But we have what we call teacher-based teams, and the teachers meet weekly to collaborate and discuss lessons and look at student data and analyze that data, academic data.
Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Justin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm a small business owner here in Columbus, Ohio. I actually had the opportunity to meet Mr. Todd Bell when I was a teenager. He encouraged me, and his words still I hold them very close to me today. But as a native of Columbus, I've seen the slow decline of the city school district, the apparent waste of resources, and even criminal charges brought against some of the administration. And at the same time, I've seen the expansive growth of Ohio State University. And it seems like it's a wonderful resource for the city schools. Could you please describe to me and all the listeners of any partnerships that Ohio State has with the Columbus City Schools? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. Dr. Moore?
Oh, wow. We have a plethora of collaborations with Columbus City Schools, but the one that I'm very familiar with and is dear to my heart, the Todd Anthony Bell National Resource Center on the African-American Male has a long-standing collaboration / partnership with the Columbus Preparatory School for Boys. In fact, last year, due to a grant and other resources that we had, we were fortunate to put a reading clinic in the school, and we've always had a long-standing mentoring program for the young men. And so there are other collaborations that we have within the College of Education and Human Ecology. You know, we see Ohio State as a land-grant university, and it aims to serve the constituents of our beloved Ohio. And I would argue it's not limited to the College of Education and Human Ecology. There are other colleges like the College of Engineering, College of Social Work, and et cetera, that have collaborations with Columbus City Schools. Columbus City Schools is intricately connected to Ohio State University.
And I would agree with Dr. Moore. And they're connected in many ways. Also, they have a math coaching program where they work directly with teachers in the local schools in Central Ohio, and what they do is they coach the teachers on how to teach math to students. So there are a lot of programs, I would say, with Ohio State and the local schools as far as working directly with teachers, because we know when teachers change, students change and they improve.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. Dr. Moore, if somebody, you know, like Adam out there isn't even sure and has a question about whether this might be right for them, where would you recommend? I mean, is there something at the Todd Anthony Bell National Resource Center on the African-American Male that would work for them and someone could talk to them?
Sure. They can send me an email personally.
Okay.
And if I'm not able to answer, I can certainly direct them specifically to someone who can provide more depth and breadth. Okay. My email is more.1408@osu.edu.
Okay. We'll post it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks again to Dr. James Moore, urban education professor in the College of Education and Human Ecology at Ohio State. Also, Jeanette Nell Henson, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Jeanette Henson, retired principal at Tusing Elementary in the Pickerington Local School District. She's also former president and current treasurer of the Ohio Alliance of Black School Educators. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.